Hello, thank you for listening with us today. My name is Kayla Verhoeven. Today is Thursday, August the 13th of 2026. We're going to go ahead and start off with an agriculture Illinois. Farmers look to land legacy. Rising values, taxes, cost complicate succession plans, by Evan Watson, 3 hours ago. First-generation farmer Tim Gold shows a small calf herd in the pasture Wednesday, the July 22nd of 2026. Gold recently sold his feeder cattle amid price concerns in the livestock market. Agriculture Illinois. Kate Huffman left her family farm looking forward to a future beyond the farmhouse. Huffman traveled up the interstate from her home in rural Galva to Chicago, where she was a credit analyst for a commercial real estate firm. After 9 months, she returned home and has remained there for 11 years. I did not realize what I had been chasing. I had really been managing the farm, learning on the farm, and everything, she said. I just put it out of my mind. Upon returning, however, she unexpectedly faced one of the harder conversations that farm families face, on topics some farmers have disregarded: the future, succession, and estate planning, all underlined as the largest intergenerational, wealth transfer in history that draws its first breath. Data reported by Kevin Brooks, the University of Illinois Extension Farm Management Educator, states that under 50% of farm families have succession plans in place for operational control of the business, with written plans to heirs dictating asset and wealth distribution enacted by less than 20%. In one of the family conversations, Huffman and her family sat around the table and drew a name from a basket, choosing the person they would pretend that had died. The family discussed that relative's wishes and what they would want, where they would want to die that day for the remainder of this quote-unquote game, though she was less enthusiastic about calling it that. It's a hard conversation to talk about death when in reality it's the only constant, one of the only constants in our life, she said. And it is sad, and it's hard to talk about, but we need to be able to plan for our legacy and plan for our futures. Farmland and family ties. Huffman is a sixth-generation farmer on a grassy property that her family owns near the homestead, where they manage a roughly 1,100-acre row crop operation. She pointed to a butternut tree that she said had once been the largest recorded in the state. At over 200 years old, she said generations of her family have played on it. We have six generations that have sat on this farm, Huffman said, and that invokes an emotion that other businesses don't. She also carries the moniker Pink Hat Farmer, a social media platform that she uses to highlight women in the industry, and she is joined by Lillian Bruce, a Yellow Lab, and a Doberman Husky Mix, respectively. The Huffman family farm has passed several times from generation to generation. Communication is critical, and she described witnessing family relationships sour and break apart amid such negotiations. Culture present since the silent generation, born in the years before World War II, she said, has limited open communication among family members. I'm not sure where that mentality come from, where you don't talk about it, she said. I guess it's because we say you don't talk about religion, you don't talk about politics, and you don't talk about money to the public, right? Well, this is all of those things. Land values have climbed over five decades, making farm estates much more valuable and much more cumbersome to settle too, she said. The price per acre of tract designated on quote-unquote excellent in Illinois' northwestern region, which includes Huffman's native Henry County, was $15,503 in 2025, up nearly 400% from 2001's $3,116 figure. According to a 2026 Farmland Trend Report from the Illinois Society of Professional Farm Managers and Rural Appraisers, for an 80-acre piece, that's $1.24 million. New and existing landowners must come to the negotiating table thinking in millions of dollars. These factors and absence of communication create difficult family environments, she said. How do you plan, or how do you help the future generation plan for their future legacy when you're not telling them what the plan even is, she said. Understanding why land values have exploded does not require an economics degree, said managing broker Chase Burns with Illinois Farmland Brokerage Land Guys, LLC. Land supply is the issue at hand. A growing population means both higher demand and lower supply. He said land investment outside agricultural use, such as in the energy sector, makes farmland pricier. That's a list 10 pages long that we could come up with of things that are gobbling up land that was farm ground 20 years ago, he said. He added that farmers are facing increasingly narrow margins. According to the American Farm Bureau Federation, total U.S. farm bankruptcies are continuing to climb year over year, with a 46% increase between 2024 and 2025. Family situations further complicate the issue. He said agriculture is more sustainable for those already in the thick of the business. To relatives who live away from the family farm, when the inheritance comes due, the choice between doubling up in a high-pressure industry and knuckling under what can be an easy million-dollar payout is simple, Burns said. Farmers across the United States faced a farm crisis in the 1980s. Surviving that, Burns said, many farming families become disenchanted with their children removing the family farm from their life plans. They told their kids in the 90s, don't come back and farm, he said. Go to college. Go get a degree. Go do something else. This life is hard. We wanted something more than that for you. Returning to the Midwest, he said, the uncertainty of the industry is a feeling that has created a situation in which people may choose to sell inherited land. Huffman shared a similar sentiment. She worked in an ag lending and is now an ag lending consultant and has worked with families handling the estates. Navigating the great wealth transfer. One substantial mystery for the industry, Huffman said, is the great wealth transfer, which Bank of America's Merrill Lynch Wealth Management defines as the passage of almost $124 trillion in assets from the silent generation and baby boomers to Generation X, Millennials, and Gen Z, as well as charitable organizations by 2048. In that time, the recipients must sit and wait to identify the transfer's impact. Huffman said this concept has brought conversations between generations about estate and legacy planning to the forefront, accompanied by concerns about estate taxes, which she said motivate some heirs to sell. The reason we see people sell, there's just a couple reasons that I think off the top of my head, is if there is not estate planning done correctly, and now we have to sell at least maybe 40 acres because we have to pay Uncle Sam, she said. The threshold for taxable estates in Illinois is $4 million, according to the Office of the Illinois Attorney General, meaning the estates are taxed at graduated rates, beginning at the first dollar over the threshold. Illinois boasts one of the highest estate tax systems in the nation. The highest bracket caps at 16%. Using the Illinois Attorney General estate tax calculator, an estate valued at $10 million will pay $926,923 in taxes to the state. Iowa, in comparison, has never levied a state-level estate tax and officially eliminated its inheritance taxes effective in January of 2025, according to the Iowa Department of Revenue. Agriculture estate planning attorney Ryan Krischer said that a failure to create the transition plans is the biggest and simplest mistake a family can make. Minimalist plans, which he referred to as quote-unquote sweetheart wills, where a spouse agrees to transfer assets to the surviving spouse at death, can result in high estate tax bills once those assets pass to the children. He said talking with family and estate planners can maintain an estate's value for the surviving generation. utilizing estate planning structures such as trusts, which are the first stop for planners like Krischer, can immediately reduce the potential tax bill. The biggest mistake, of course, is doing nothing, he said. I mean, flatline. That's big number one. The second is not taking the time to think through the day-to-day operations and what realistically that would look like in transition in the future. Among the technicalities in legal discussions is a more personal issue, the need for the older generation to communicate with heirs. The third thing, and this is huge to me, is not talking to your next generation, Krischer said. That's the one thing I've seen time and time again that will lead to drastic family conflict in the future. Independently, Huffman shared that sentiment. Her strong feelings around estate planning and succession stem from personal experience. She witnessed the tension in her parents and grandparents when heirs are left out of the conversation. Sometimes the damage from a lack of communication can be permanent. I don't want to see families go through what we went through, she said. I don't. I want the family Christmases. Agriculture and beyond, the industry. Inflation-adjusted net farm income is expected to fall 2.6% or $4.1 billion in 2026, driven largely by lower cash receipts, the United States Department of Agriculture reports. Burns said that squeezed by land input and commodity prices, strong farm financials can be difficult to maintain and that smaller operations must diversify to stay in business. If somebody has a smaller operation, and they want to survive, and that handoff to the next generation, they need to get real serious about things like regenerative ag right now, and really serious about diversifying and adding other sources of farm income to their operations, he said. Huffman said there are strategic, expansionary decisions necessary to build steady farm income, besides her Pink Hat Farmer branding, which she has merchandised. The family owns four patches of prairie across their properties. Soon, she plans to launch a U-Pick agritourism option where visitors can roam and pick flowers as they like, paying at the end of their visit. The U-Pick format works in tandem with her Harvest Host partnership, a service allowing property owners to advertise their land for RV camping. While Harvest Host does not pay landowners directly, they benefit by marketing products and services, to the campers, which Huffman said is through the Prairie U-Pick. For Tim Gold, a 39-year-old first-generation farmer near Geneseo, the talk about succession and profit margins does not distract him from his lifelong dreams. With the size of my operation and everything as of right now, it's not a huge concern to me because I'm still looking to grow the operation, he said. But it's definitely on my foresight for the future. Gold worked for a dairy farmer in East Moline while in high school, when he realized agriculture was a legitimate path he could follow. He was raised a city kid with no formal ties to agriculture outside of a small acreage where his grandfather lived. He began raising bucket calves and selling freezer beef in 2010 and has stayed afloat through strategic business decisions. As the cattle market saw drastic swings in recent years, he chose to sell his feeder cows and continue feeding freezer beef. In the last 5 years, he has expanded a 10-acre row crop operation to around 200 acres, cash renting the land that he farms. He spent the first 10 years on livestock, working small, even when breaking into row crops. His work professionally in the seed corn industry overlapped with his work on the farm until last year, when he made the leap to farming full-time. He said it was a massive shift away from the simple job-secure lifestyle he had lived at as his operation grew. My last job, it was a six-figure job, and definitely leaving that left a lot of money on the table for us, he said. But my idea was, I've only got one shot to try and do this full-time to grow, and I almost felt like I was helping somebody achieve somebody else's goal. He is also married with three kids, one of whom is his biological six-year-old daughter. He handles the farm labor himself, but his daughter occasionally joins him. He said the calves are her favorite part of joining him on the farm. While she names some of the animals, he has noticed that those names are sometimes inconsistent. Farming has enabled Gold to control more of his day, despite the effort required, he said. Now, he can attend to family events on his own schedule, with a calendar only he controls. Gold's operation remains on the smaller end. However, he said that it has enabled him to carve a niche in the community where effort yields results regardless of scale. One of my strategies is to be a smaller guy. I look for the smaller pieces of ground that aren't quite as appealing to some of the bigger operations, and some of what might seem to be less productive ground that guys are kind of avoiding, and just working with that and trying to be as profitable as I can on it, he said. Gold and Hoffman operate at opposite ends of the spectrum, with different outlooks but similar passions for the industry. Looking ahead, Gold said he hopes to build something that he loves and that will also stand the test of time. I'd lie if I said the start of this wasn't just because it's what I wanted to do, he said. But as you get older and you have kids, I'd love to see them be able to take it on and live the lifestyle. That's the thing. It's almost the payment in my eyes. It's the lifestyle of it. Moving on now to some court and crime news. Ex-jail CO faces child image case by Caitlin Kleptic 3 hours ago. Bloomington. A former McLean County correctional officer has been detained and will be terminated from his county job after state officials said he was caught with a photo and video depicting the sexual abuse of children. Trent W. Arbuckle, 56, of Hudson, appeared Tuesday afternoon before Judge William Yoder, charged with 2 counts of possession of child sex abuse material. The Class II felonies are punishable by up to 7 years in prison, according to a news release from the Illinois Attorney General's office. It is unacceptable for anyone to exploit children on the internet, but this offense is even more shocking when allegedly committed by a member of law enforcement, Attorney General Quaim Rule said in the release. This horrendous crime leaves lifelong scars on survivors and their families, which is why my office Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force will continue to work with local authorities to hold these predators accountable, no matter who they are. According to a news release from McLean County Sheriff Matt Lane, Arbuckle previously was employed by the McLean County Detention Facility as a correctional officer. In October of 2023, he accepted a civilian position as a control operator for the sheriff's office. At the end of Tuesday's hearing, the McLean County Sheriff's Office notified Arbuckle of its intent to, quote-unquote, seek termination of his employment, Lane said. Probable cause. Assistant Attorney General Sarah Schreier appeared on behalf of the state Tuesday and filed a petition to deny Arbuckle's pretrial release, arguing he posed a danger that could not be mitigated by any lesser conditions than detention. According to the probable cause statement, on June 18th, an investigator from Milo's office received a cyber tip from the Center for Missing and Exploited Children, which showed 4 files identified as child sex abuse materials that were uploaded to a Google account. That account was registered to Arbuckle, and the recovery email address for the Google account was his McLean County work email, Schreier noted. The investigation revealed that Arbuckle had uploaded files and logged into that Google account from various locations, primarily his home address, and in buildings with internet connections registered to the McLean County government. One image Google reported in the cyber tip was uploaded to the account June the 8th using a McLean County wireless connection, the prosecutor said. 2 other images were also uploaded, but he has not been charged in connection to those photos because investigators are working to confirm the ages of those pictured, Schreier said. A video file was uploaded March the 26th, but the file was locked, which prompted investigators to obtain a search warrant for Google. They then were able to view this photo and confirmed it depicted child sex abuse, according to the probable cause statement. Investigators were also able to identify Arbuckle in other images on that Google Drive account, including several photos of him and photos that showed his address. His account data also showed that Arbuckle had used the search engine to seek prostitutes in Peoria and Springfield around this time, the prosecutor said. On June the 9th, Google notified him that his account was being shut down for violating the company's guidelines. Schreier said this prompted by Arbuckle sending 7 links to himself from X, formerly known as Twitter. These links contained child sex abuse material, and investigators found that he had also emailed himself several links to child sex abuse material. Arrest and detention. Authorities located Arbuckle on Monday while he was on his way to work at the McLean County Detention Facility. They obtained search warrants and proceeded to search his car and home, Schreier said. They found handgun in the center console of his car and about 10 to 20 firearms in his Hudson home. Schreier noted Arbuckle has a valid firearm owner's identification card, but he does not have a concealed carry license. According to the probable cause statement, Arbuckle spoke with the police and acknowledged that he had watched videos of child sex abuse on X. He told officers he was then prevented from accessing the material by Google. He told officers he has viewed hundreds of videos of child sex abuse, and he explained that he finds the videos online and saves them to his Google Drive, Schreier said. After his arrest, Arbuckle was initially taken to the McLean County Detention Facility and placed on administrative leave, according to the news release from the sheriff's office. He was later transferred to the Champaign County Jail, but was brought back to McLean County for his detention hearing Tuesday. Officers from the sheriff's office and Bloomington Police Department assisted with this case, Raul said. Detention hearing. In arguing for his release, Assistant Public Defender Stuart Wallace said Arbuckle had been employed by the county for 23 years, working in various capacities at that detention facility. He also noted that Arbuckle was honorably discharged from the military. During his argument, Wallace said Arbuckle does not reside with minors and he is not accused of sharing or creating the images. Authorities seized Arbuckle's electronic devices during this investigation, so they are no longer in his possession, he added. Wallace called Arbuckle forthcoming with the police, stating he, quote-unquote, voluntarily spoke with detectives and made statements to them that were recorded the essentially amount to a confession. Schreier asked Yoder that Arbuckle be detained, arguing he poses a danger to the community and specifically to children, and calling the offenses inherently violent. She also argued that the evidence that indicated he sought prostitution services in the same time frame as he was watching videos of child sex abuse showed that Arbuckle has a desire to, quote-unquote, seek sexual pleasure in real life through other ways of illegal conduct. As a sheriff's office employee, he was placed in a position of trust in the community, and if he were not detained pending trial, he would be released to quote-unquote basically the same conditions in which these crimes occurred, Schreier said. Because of his previous employment, the prosecutor argued, Arbuckle was familiar with consequences of his actions, but that was not enough to deter him. Yoder granted the state's petition and ordered that Arbuckle be detained. Authorities did not say whether he will be held in the McLean County Jail or return to Champaign County while his case is pending. Arbuckle is scheduled for an arraignment at 9 a.m. on September the 4th in McLean County Court. Today's Flick Fact. Question. This newspaper made world history of sorts 105 years ago today when a reader, Laura Curley, submitted something to do this very day that is savored around the world. Do you know what it was? Answer. On August 13th of 1921, in its recipe roundup column, the Pantograph published a dessert recipe for what Miss Curley had created in her kitchen and thought that good enough to share with readers. Nilla wafer banana pudding. Nabisco, makers of Nilla wafers, saw her recipe, tried it in their kitchens, and agreed that it was delicious, and added the recipe to the back of its cookie boxes in what became, and still is, a world favorite. And the rest is history. Miss Curley, by the way, passed in 1967. How time flies. 100 years ago, today in 1926 of August, many acceptances are being received to the invitations for the annual homecoming and 7th anniversary celebration of Fairview Sanitarium, which will be held on August the 17th at the sanitarium. About 850 residents of this county have availed themselves of the opportunity to take treatment here. 75 years ago, on August the 13th of 1951, a new variety store located at 123 North Street in Normal, operated by Robert Randall, will open about December the 1st. A Piggly Wiggly store, now at the North Street location, will move to 205 Broadway, the old Jackson Furniture Store building. 50 years ago, on August the 13th of 1976, Bloomington Normal Airport Authority members have decided to have another go at working out a plan for the quote-unquote business park. This cause of authority members' frustration is the Bloomington City Council's refusal to rezone the land northeast at the intersection of East Washington Street and Hershey Road. 25 years ago, on August the 13th of 2001, through Kathy Copeland's eyes, Hi Kevin used to look like a quote-unquote old, never used, never cared for. That is unlikely visitors will say that now. Copeland, a member of Tri-Valley's Girl Scout Troop 91, was one of six scouts who spent countless hours renovating and redecorating the small building. The two-year project ended on August the 12th when the scouts joined their leaders and others to rededicate the historic campsite in Bloomington's Forest Park off of Morris Avenue. Also participating in the project from Troop 91 were April Creek, Allie Haydens, Mary Ann Porter, and Stephanie Piper. They are senior Girl Scouts, a level that is not often reached. Moving on now to some local news, Lincoln preps August the 28th through the 29th routes for balloons over 66 traffic and other events by Matus Janik 4 hours ago. Lincoln, thousands of visitors are expected in Lincoln August the 28th and 29th for balloons over 66 and several other weekend events. Night glows and other festivals will return for a third year at the Open Arms Church campus at 1321 Illinois Route 10. The weekend will also include the Up and Smoke Barbecue Competition, Doc Dogs, and the Rail Splitter Festival. Lincoln Police will use a special traffic pattern from about 4 to 10 p.m. both days. Visitors entering Open Arms should turn south from Keokuk Street or Illinois Route 10 onto Campus View Drive. Departing traffic will use Chapel Road to reach Route 10 east and west. Balloon crews will have a separate entrance and exit. Police urged drivers to follow the posted event signs instead of GPS directions. The traffic plan also affects Limit Street or Illinois Route 121, Campus View Drive, and Chapel Road. Police maps show the public entrance and exit routes, local traffic-only areas, and the balloon crew entrance near Route 10 and Chapel Road. Once again, Lincoln Police will use a special traffic pattern from 4 to 10 p.m. on both days. For visitors entering Open Arms, they should turn south on Keokuk Street or Illinois Route 10 onto Campus View Drive. Departing traffic will use Chapel Road and reach Route 10 east and west. Balloon crews will have a separate entrance and exit. Police urged drivers to follow posted event signs instead of the GPS directions for this event for balloons over 66 and several other weekend events. The traffic plan also affects Limit Street or Illinois Route 121, Campus View Drive, and Chapel Road. Police maps show the public entrance and exit routes, local traffic-only areas, and the balloon crew entrance near Route 10 and Chapel Road. Thank you so much for listening today with us, friends. My name is Kayla Verhoeven, and until next time of part 2 of the Pantograph, have a great day.